Let's start this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, June 6, 2011, here in our Central Services Office. First order of business this evening will be the review and approval of minutes for the May 16th meeting. Would you please take a moment to review and let me know if they meet with your approval. Okay then, let's get to the meat of the conversation this evening. The first order of business is a telephone service recommendation. We currently have an agreement in place with AT&T for phone services where they provide for monthly service, local, long distance, as well as directory assistance, sort of a typical phone plan that you might experience at your home. Currently, we pay just in excess of about $89,000 a year for their services, around $7,200 a month or $89,000 a year annually. So, as we do with a lot of our vendors, as we have done over the past year, we've looked at a lot of relationships that we've had and contacted two local companies that can offer the same types of services. The first was Simcoe Comcast. The second one was Call One. We had a couple of different meetings, Mike and I, with representatives from each of these companies, and they provided us with a proposal. Simcoe Comcast has presented a proposal to the district whereby we can save $2,500 per month, or about $30,920 annually. The second vendor that we had that provided a price to us will provide for $3,448 in savings, or approximately $41,379. The existing systems that we have in place will be maintained with Simcoe Comcast or Call One, and based upon the cost of the services, the savings that we expect to receive, we are making a recommendation to the Finance Committee that would indicate we move our services to Call One. Regarding additional cost, I spoke with Mike and he seems to think that they will need some consulting cost from a Sentinel, who we have an existing relationship and does some of that technology work for us. And we would estimate that those costs not to exceed $1,000. So it's my recommendation that we move forward with to move our services from AT&T to Call One, estimated savings of about $41,400 a year. And we would look to bring this back to the board on August 8th for discussion and then August 22nd for action. Do you have any questions?
How long have we been with AT&T?
Forever.
You mean
why would they not
when local phone service became AT&T?
Try dealing with someone from AT&T.
Actually, I have.
It's impossible.
It's days of computer voices.
I spent a lot of time on the phone and being bounced from representative to representative to representative. And I'll be honest with you, I just got frustrated because my first reaction was, well, let's go see what AT&T is willing to offer. I can't even get anybody there. So that's when I thought, well, I've got a couple of contacts that do the same type of work, namely this Comcast and Call One. And so I contacted the companies. They sent out representatives very quickly, within a week or two after initial contact, and they had a price to me within a week to 10 days after our initial meetings. I took the business meetings. Mike sat in at sort of the meetings where we were discussing, obviously, finances, but also the technology perspective. And we don't anticipate any interruption of services, nothing along those lines. So we did try to contact AT&T. And this is sort of a two-step process. What we have is we have our normal telephone service with them. We also have a piece out there for internet services. That runs us about $1,500 a month. So Mike and I met with these folks, and we thought the best thing is let's move our telephone services first. Let's get a feel for how the relationship is going to work, and then we would ultimately look to move our internet services because we feel as though we can realize some cost savings there also.
And Call One will use all the same system, same equipment?
Same equipment, same numbers, same everything. They just buy in such a volume from AT&T that they are able to receive substantially reduced rates than what we can purchase on our own.
Is
this a three-year contract?
That's what we would recommend entering into, is a three-year contract.
And we just contacted these guys directly, we didn't put out for bid or anything, like a three-year
bid? No, I did not go out to bid. I don't know that this is something that you would typically go out to bid for.
It's telecommunications. We're not, by law, by school code, you don't have to go out to bid. And so therefore, by getting competitive quotation, you know, we're doing, that's our due diligence. And these are two companies that we know have a name in the field. Call One has got quite a few school districts in Illinois. They have quite a few school districts in Illinois. Have flipped over to Call One.
References, how are their services, how's the relationship, and everybody speaks nothing but very very highly of the operation.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was any way to change, like, the, you know, for consumers, there's that consumer calculator where you plug in your usage and then it says here's the plan you should be on at AT&T. Like, I did that a couple months ago and it dropped like $20 a month. I didn't know if there's the equivalent business version or something like that you can do.
I have not seen it, but neither have I really investigated it. Once I was not able to establish AT&T, I moved on.
Well, this is a lot of money on an annual basis.
I was
over $100,000 of billing to them. I'm shocked that they didn't.
I'm not. You know, some of these companies are just so huge. I've dealt with AT&T in other districts. I have found it equally difficult to deal with them in other positions that I was in. And this is just sort of, to me, this is just sort of how they handle their business. They're just so big that little guys like us really don't matter. And this Call One is so large that they're obviously purchasing at a much greater discounted rate than we could ever hope to purchase at.
What's the downside to this? I mean, this is, we get into this for a three-year term and we don't like the service, and that's our downside.
If the downside is if we don't like their service, we leave after 3 years.
Is there an escape clause?
I would think, first of all, I don't anticipate any issues. I've done my diligence in terms of checking references. They come back clean. Everybody's very happy with the services that they're provided. I would just expect that same type of service from these folks as others have received. Could I talk to them and see about changing the agreement? This is pretty much standard language that they use with school districts. I would tell you there is a relationship, just so you're aware of it. There's a relationship between the Illinois Association of School Business Officials, of which Phyllis and I are members. But our organization has many relationships out there. You can buy gas, you can buy electric. As you know, we were part of the Illinois Energy Consortium previously, which was our electric. And they did not give us the best price. So we moved away from them, meaning the IEC. So I don't base a decision based upon my relationship with a professional organization, but rather the good that they can provide to the district.
Sure.
Was there a guaranteed percentage uptime in the AT&T contract existing?
That contract is so old, I would venture a guess that I don't even have the contract anymore. Phyllis, have you ever seen one?
Yeah, we had a volume calling discount before we did get a discount that expired.
But not like a guaranteed percentage, you know, like when
I don't recall having language like that in that contract. I don't recall seeing it, but again, I had it been over 6 years when we had, or 5 years when we signed that one.
I was wondering if you had something similar in this new contract.
The Call One contract?
Yeah, guaranteed uptime. You know, like when I was in the telecom industry, the equipment was guaranteed, you know, up to 5 nines of reliability, so you would only be down for a minute a year. Just as an example. Not that that's what this should be. But just wondering, just want to make sure with the reduced cost that you guys are getting the same level of uptime that you would have.
That would be my expectation.
Yeah, the
local
line.
They're using the AT&T line, so again, it's not like we're moving to
there's only one phone company.
The infrastructure remains the same.
Right.
I understand that. Now you have them to have to badger AT&T if there's a service interruption. Just want to make sure we got our bases covered.
And yet, these are things that, because there is no contract, at this point. You haven't been presented with a contract, have you?
With AT&T?
No, with this.
I have rough language of a contract that they've given me, but it's just rough language at this point in time.
I mean, so really this idea is still in the negotiations process. So, I mean, raising a question like guaranteed uptime to raise with them or other questions that you may have about a contract is a good time to do so.
And I'll look into that. Are there any other questions you might want me to ask?
I haven't heard of tiered service that way. You know, unless they're putting some special equipment on your site to offer a higher level.
It could be a response time to a service like, you know, 12, 4, 6, 8, 12 hours, you know, guaranteed service. I don't know.
I'll answer those questions, or I'll ask those questions and see what types of responses I can get.
You know, Dan, you raised a question of the calculator, because you can get a personal consumer calculator. Are you asking, does AT&T offer a calculator? Are you asking if this organization offers a calculator, or?
I just know that it's the Citizens Utility Board offers it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's an independent type of usage, and then it says, here's what you could be, here's the package you should choose, and here's what it would cost you.
Gotcha.
I'll continue to look into that, and then if there's any updated information, I'll present it at the August 8th meeting.
Do we really need local and national directory assistance? I mean, don't want people to go to the internet and
Google
who dials 411 anymore.
I do.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and we have people who, you know, like they don't have access to a computer, they need to dial 411, and then if you don't have that, then the surcharges. You know, again, I don't know what our usage is, but it's, I don't know if it's, I don't even think.
It's pretty minor. Yeah. If it's $40 a month, right. Use of that.
Any, I'm just curious if you have a ballpark on potential internet savings maybe?
No, we pay about $1,500 a month now, so I don't know what the potential is for internet savings at this time. We just wanted to get this in place and take it in sort of a two-step process.
Just to ask the question, the Comcast is actually less expensive. Is it the reason that you want to go with the call one is the that there's no interruption of the lines, where it's with Comcast we'd have to.
No, the least expensive is call one. The savings are less.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Maybe I misstated it. The savings are projected at $2,500 a month versus $3,400 a month for call one.
Okay.
So that's not the cost of the savings.
I'm sorry. I got those reversed.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, Michael. Okay, beginning my what is to be my fifth year here, District 41. And one of the first things that Ann asked me to do upon my arrival was to put together a long-term capital projects listing, if you will. So it's something that I continuously use for projects as we move forward. We have now gone out, as you can see in your spreadsheets, up to the year 2025. And I've got to be honest with you. Things get very hazy after 5 years. I can project the useful life of a boiler. I can tell you how long a roof is going to last or a parking lot. But when you start getting into just different types of equipment, such as the Asian obsolescence plan, things like that, they become rather hazy. So what I've tried to do is identify as many different types of equipment, different types, just literally a washboard or a cupboard full of different types of equipment that the district has, and what their useful life expectations are, and when we might be in the market to replace these things. So what I've done is we have a summary sheet here. It's taken from 2009 all the way up to 2025. It's broken down between building improvements, parking lots, roofing projects, age and obsolescence, and then something we've added this year is the painting schedule, because the buildings have not been painted since the last referendum 10, 12 years ago. So it's been that long. We've done some spot painting, but nothing of any significance. So I guess I'll take you to what I call the implementation schedule. And these are items that have been identified through the life safety, the annual five-year life safety project that the architects are required to do. It's been taken, all these have been taken from the master facilities meetings that we've had, the actual school staff has had input, teachers, principals, custodial services. It's been, administrators have had input. So really, anybody who has virtually anything to say, I try to capture and add a dollar value to it so that at least we can track it over a period of time. As you can see, these projects run the gamut really from an ADA lift that was installed at Lincoln back about 3 or 4 years ago, to different types of AC projects, exterior door painting, or door replacement. We've now gone out, we're experiencing some wear and tear in our masonry work for tuck pointing. There are literally dozens of different types of projects that have been added to this list. I see some playground equipment, wall repairs. This one's from Ben Franklin, where they requested to have their workroom reconfigured. Landscaping, we have 32 portables in the district. They are beginning to, some of them are beginning to wear, so we need to put a plan in place for eventual replacement or at least significant work that needs to be done. I'm trying to add a dollar figure to that. So as you can see, there are dozens of different line items that have been added to this spreadsheet over the years. So that's just a basic explanation of what we've developed. If you have any questions regarding this first spreadsheet that we have included here, then we'll just continue to. I'll continue to present. If you have any questions, just let me know.
Bob, when I went through this, I saw that we're putting a generator at every location.
That's something that came out of the master facility plan a number of years ago. It's just an idea. I know that we put a generator in here about 3 years ago as a result of some weather-related issues that we had where virtually the entire system on this side of town went down. Mike has actually asked us to start taking a look at putting a generator in at Hadley, because that acts as a second hub of the district if something goes down here. Mike, if I'm explaining that wrong.
That's correct, yeah. Particularly at Hadley, we look at a generator in order to keep basic services up and running in the event that we had a disaster here and phone service, network service, internet service went down. Hadley would act as a redundant site, and in the event of power failure throughout the district or multiple sites, at least the basic services will be kept up and running in Hadley.
Well, this is Ben Franklin.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just $350,000 to put a generator.
Well, each site has its own tech hub that supports that building for things like phone, internet access, network access. Ideally, it would be nice to have a generator at each site to keep those sites up and running in the event that they lost power, especially for things like phones in an emergency situation.
And Drew, these are just items that I track. Whether I bring it to the Finance Committee or the Board for a formal recommendation, that's something that's vetted out every year. I just wanted to show you that We've identified areas. And, you know, if I have a problem at one building, generally speaking, over a period of time or over a number of years, I'm going to have that same problem anywhere. If I have a roof problem, if I have a power issue or a plumbing issue, those types of problems, if I have it at one, eventually it's going to work into another building. So it's my way of,
it's planning,
of tracking and planning.
Sure.
And again, this is my worksheet. This is what I use to keep track of things. I generally don't publish it. I don't put it out there for people to review. This is what I use to
so this is a working file.
It's a working file. Okay. It's updated probably every quarter. I'm in this file, just reviewing things, looking at things, prioritizing and reprioritizing, just to make sure that we don't lose track of things. So nothing in here is written in stone. Nothing in here is a formal recommendation. This is just my internal tool to use as we move forward with a capital plan over a number of years. And like I say, you go out beyond 5 years, things start to get kind of achy out there.
So the parking lot and the roofing project seem very high.
Well,
I'm admittedly naive about it. So,
we can always come back to this, okay? Let me talk a little bit about roofing and parking lots. First of all, I'll talk about parking lots, okay? We did a little bit of work on parking lots back a couple of years ago when we did the Ben Franklin Stormwater Project. We are going to do some work at Lincoln and Franklin again this year for parking lots. Other than what we've done over the past couple of years, the lots haven't been touched since the last referendum. Now, we have done some annual work on them in terms of seal coating and hot crack filling and striping and things of that nature, but no major work. If my director of buildings and grounds and it has an area where there's a lot of alligating or erosion taking place, then we'll spend a few thousand dollars just to keep that in working order. But parking lots, your useful life is about 10 years. You're just not going to get any more life than that. And that's just how it is. I mean, these are big dollars. They're big dollar commitments. And again, this is something that we go in. I use this as a tool. We go in, we review, we prioritize and reprioritize every year. But at least we have sections of our parking lot that we know we need to go out and look at in 3 years or 5 years or whatever the case may be. It's better to have it like this than try to take a shotgun approach and really not have the areas identified. So again, this is just a working tool. And you're right. There's a lot of money at stake out here. You look over the next several years between parking lots and roofs, there's a lot of millions of dollars at stake out here.
And I would just add to this, Sam, that the dollars that you see represent not just resurfacing, but doing a replacement. So there's a difference in the cost when you just start, you know, scraping and then putting a new surface on. And so Bob's really looking at the deeper work that...
Our lots are so old that you no longer... Typically what you do in a resurfacing project is you come in, you take off 2 inches off the top and put fresh asphalt down. Ours are in such a safe state now that they're going to need to be taken down, much as we did when we did the Franklin project. Nice. We went down and we had to go 2 feet deep, because there was so much debris and the lots were in such bad shape, and basically a lot of our lots have been built on less than ideal conditions. When we did the Ben Franklin Stormwater Project, we were down about 15 feet in the ground, and you could see the different types of soil, of debris, it was just, when you had that whole side of the hill open, you could just see sort of the history of Glen Ellen and how how things have just sort of been dumped or placed or whatever. And from what I understand, a lot of Glen Ellen is built on a peat bog. So that's not really good, stable material to build on. As I said, when we did Franklin, we had to do what they call undercutting and went down 2 feet below the existing lot, and then had to lay three different sizes of fresh snow in there just to give us a base to work on. So my numbers, I don't feel as though they're that out of line. I feel as though I won't say they're overly conservative, but nor are they overly optimistic. I think they're reasonable costs based upon the information that we know. And additionally, 4 years ago, we did a lot of, I look at my partner over there because she's my reference point.
In memory sometimes.
Yeah, most of the time.
Soil borings?
Soil borings, thank you. We have taken samples of soils from probably 6 to 10 different spots over all of our grounds within the district, and we have a written analysis of what our each of our locations look like, and that's a pretty good indication in terms of the type of work that needs to be done. We have that information available. We readily use it. We review it annually. So it's good information to have. We probably have a total, if we have, we even did them out here. We have 6 sites. We probably did, like I said, 6 to 10 borings at each site that go all the way down like 15 or 20 feet. So we know when you're going to hit good soil or a good substructure versus when you're going to have issues. We tore this lot up 2 years ago now, and it's kind of amazing. Right back here, right in front of the garage, what they had done was take an old house and literally just caved it in and buried it. So when we were out here doing our work to replace this lot, we were down 2 feet under the structure, under the asphalt, what was the top of the asphalt, digging out it's cinder block foundations. They had old floor joists and beams and whatever kind of other debris you can get from collapsing a, an early 1900s home was buried out in their lot. So that's why we have the number of issues that we have.
Bob, I have really 2 questions. One of them is, it's one of the line items. CHI is Churchill.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And it says, replace existing plumbing.
Yep.
232,000. What's wrong with the plumbing with the Churchill?
I mean, it's 50 years old. It's beginning to wear.
Okay.
Please keep in mind that we have older buildings. Ben Franklin is almost 85 years old. I don't know exactly which is the newest school. I think it's Churchill. That's parts of Churchill is from the 60s.
Right.
You're talking about a 50-year-old building. These things, these facilities are going to need to be maintained and constantly updated. No matter what type of master facility work we do, we have what we have, and we're going to need to dedicate X number of dollars per year to be able to maintain those. Whether it's roofs, whether it's parking lots, or air conditioners, boilers. I believe just before you came on the board, we had I think since I've got here, we've done 3 boiler replacements. Of boilers, they're like $225,000 a pop. So it's quite an investment.
And my other question is, I'm trying to put your top page to the schedules.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at, and I suppose that's,
if you take my top schedule that says capital project summary, and if you were to go to, I believe it looks like it's page 4, maybe the pages are, oh no,
yeah,
there's
4.
3 or 4. If you go to page 4, if you look at the bottom and you go to 2009, there it is, 1,712,000 foots to that fourth page of the building site improvement schedule.
So that's only the building site.
It's all the building site work.
It's not
parking lots, roofs, ancient obsolescence. Each one has at the end of each spreadsheet, that number, that total number will tie into the summary page. And this is what we annually spend regarding our facilities and our equipment to keep them updated and maintained and updated.
Okay.
I guess I thought stormwater was related to parking lots, but it's like it's separate.
Well, this is the one project that, and I don't know what your feelings are going to be on this, and I really haven't discussed them in the end, but we're projecting, if you take a look at that the lot in the southwest corner of Hadley, it's in bad shape, okay? And we thought that if we were to move this project forward in 2012, and we would do it because Hawthorne's going to be redone from Glenbard West up to Glencoe, we might do this in partnership with the village, because we received a nice You know, when the village and the district worked hand in hand when they were redoing Bryan Avenue last year, we realized about $75,000 worth of work that the village took over for us. They removed the retaining wall, they did the curb and gutter, they did the sidewalks. They did all that work that ordinarily would have fallen on our shoulders. They did it for us. In a spirit of cooperation amongst governmental entities. So what we're looking at is maybe next summer we bring forward a project to redo the lot, rebuild the lot at Hadley, which has not been done. About 10 or 11 years ago, they had a 2-inch base put on there that is a geotech fiber or a fabric. They did not take it down to sort of its core and undercut the existing structure, if you will, to get a good solid base in there. They didn't have the money. They ran out of money. Whatever the case may be, they went in and just put a 2-inch sort of top on there. So now what we're having is a lot that's 20-plus years old, that's in pretty bad shape, and that we're going to need to go in and undercut that whole parking lot and rebuild. So in conjunction with that, one of the recommendations that came out of the master facility plan and comments that I've had, or conversations that I've had with the police department, nobody's really happy with the way that pick-up and drop-off acts at Hadley. You know, you come in from the east and you've got to follow it around. There's a retention pond right in the middle of the building, or the front of the building there, that's surrounded by 5 and 6 foot bushes. It doesn't flow real well. You can't see real well. The police have mentioned to us, to me, when I've had my meetings with them, that it would be a nice, they would appreciate that somewhere down the line that we would at least take a look at how we approach our student pickup and drop off at that location. So what we've done
at
Hadley.
You said retention.
There is retention.
Retention right out front. It's fenced.
It's fenced and buried in bushes. And that's why you have such a difficult time if you're looking east, you got to kind of edge out and see what's going on there. So what we thought is...
Water in it, right?
No, but it's a hole deep enough right where they had to fence it off.
Yeah.
Because it has to be there to take in any water in the 100-year rain or 200-year rain or whatever we have lately. But yeah, there's really a huge swale there, and that's why there's a fence there for safety issues so nobody can like roll down into it, even when it's dry, because it's like a very bad gulf.
It's a very poorly configured front of a building in terms of ease of pickup and drop off.
So again, this is my working document. We're looking at redoing a parking lot at Hadley, which really does need to be done. So in conjunction is one of the conversations that I've had with the architects is give me a figure. What would it cost me to reconfigure that front drive at Hadley, remove the above ground detention, and then bury it in vaults as we did when we built the Hadley Addition, bury it in vaults underneath the driveway. Rather the main parking area. We would construct it so that it could take truck traffic, bus traffic, I won't say truck, but certainly the types of trucks that we get on our property, bus traffic, car traffic, and so forth. So this is just a placeholder for dollars in terms of what we would estimate the cost to be. But if we're going to look at spending that kind of money, we might as well take a long-term look and perspective. Not only how can we maintain our facilities, but how can we enhance them for a number of years out. And this, to me, is, I don't want to say it's a no-brainer, but it would make good sense to be able to address all the issues at once.
But there's no vault underneath that existing part.
There is not a vault there. The only vault that we have on the property is in the back area where we put the Hadley Addition. So, long-term, when I bring a recommendation to the board, I try to say, what's it going to look like 10, 20, 30 years out there? And what we've talked about is given the conversations that we've had with master facility planning and everything else, I try to take a look at recommendations that if I'm going to move it once, I want it to stay. And that would be the best place that you could put it, would be under a revamped lot on a southwest corner. We'd never have to touch it again.
Is that something that the village is also interested in doing?
Anytime we're interested in stormwater, the village is willing to talk about it. It's just, do you have enough time? Because these projects take a long time to put together. They take a long time to roll through the approval process. This is in an area that probably will require Village of Glen Ellen to sign off on it, as well as Wheaton to sign off, because that area might actually be in Wheaton. So there's a lot of intergovernmental work that needs to take place. And I'm going to tell you, the planning that we talk about for a capital project, it goes on annually, and it goes out a year, 2, 3 years out at any given time. I'm talking about, I'm meeting with the architects now. You know, we sort of just finished last year's capital projects. We're starting this year's capital projects, and we're already planning for a year or two out there.
Are they still doing the Forest Glen parking lot? Permeable pavers?
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to start after the board hearing on June 20th. I have to have a public, we have to have a public hearing. And we're going to do that. We're going to hold a public hearing on June 20th. June 21st, the landscaper's been contracted to start the work.
I mean, it wasn't that much.
But it's one of the last. And it's one of the last things we learned from the village that we would have to hold a hearing in order to do that work.
I just, within the past month, I received, probably 3 weeks, I received notification.
Dan, you asked a question, do all parking lot work need stormwater? And you were asking a more general question?
Well, I didn't realize there was a separate parking lot area. When I was looking at the recommended work implementation, whenever I would see stormwater, I thought that's what it was, because it seems like mm-hmm. we're always doing it in parking lots. But now it seems like it's separate.
It is. Go on, sir. Go on.
I've tried to break it out separately so that I can keep track of it.
Not all stormwater projects would be related to parking lots.
Not necessarily.
You know, at Churchill, we have that big detention in the back, and as a result, have very little green space or play space for students at Churchill, despite the apparent, what looks like the largest plot of land that we have. So we have talked about doing underground storage there. That was part of the master facilities recommendation from the site. That would have nothing to do with parking lots. It would just be a matter of creating more green space.
Lincoln is another area.
Lincoln is another example of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Churchill, how do you even get back up?
We'll get back there.
We'd have to go through the forest preserve. I mean, we'd have to work on that.
Dan, just change the configuration so the water just goes up.
This is where the neighbors.
Forest preserve. Why short of
them? Oh, God, don't say that.
Can't do that.
Sorry. We would have calls beyond call. So we talked about site improvements. We talked about parking lots. We can talk about roofing projects now. Generally speaking, a roof is going to last. Now, keep in mind that we annually do work on our parking lots and our roofs, anywhere from $25,000 to about $60,000 a year, just in terms of normal maintenance. That's what it costs us annually to keep our roofs and our parking lots in as good a shape as they are, and to have got the kind of use on our parking lots that we have is an indication of the type of commitment that we have towards maintaining our facilities. So roofs, we do the same thing. Ed, my director of buildings and grounds, comes in and he says, "Hey Bob, we need this kind of work done this summer." And we just, as a normal course of business, we get the work done. So regarding roofing projects, we've taken a look. The last major roofing jobs that we did, except for last year when we put on the Hadley addition, was back in about 1997. Now in 97, not every roof was done. Only those that needed to be done in conjunction with that referendum were actually taken care of. So our roofs are anywhere from 1997 and older, with a lot of them having a year or two. I have a roofing analysis with several roofing areas in our buildings that are due to expire, meaning they're off warranty, they're beyond the useful life. They're at the 17 to 20 year range, and that 20 year range is sort of the upper limit of what you're going to get typically out of a school facility roof. Go ahead. So, roofing projects, we've put some substantial dollars out there. Now, I also want you to understand that the roofs, when you go up on a roof of a building, of the size of a Hadley, 185,000 square foot. It's not just an open space. They deliberately designed them so that it's sort of phased in, so you don't have to come in with a $5 or $6 million commitment in a particular year when that roof goes bad on you. It has sections, and it's all created with that in mind, that you'll do this section this year or a couple of sections this year and then other sections in future years. So that's the way our roofs have been laid out. That's the way they're designed. That's why you see sort of a flow through in terms of roof dollars committed over the next several years.
Go ahead, Dan.
I understand with capital projects the need for design, because typically you're having something new done or you have to change a design. Can you explain to me what is the design fee with regards to replacing it?
What would be the design fee? I'm sorry, I'm looking through my...
It's not clear to me what you're getting. You know, I understand on other capital projects what you're getting.
Just the roof, just the design of the roof itself, and then the fees necessary, because we don't have the technical ability to construct the bid documents. It's just like any other construction project that we have. So you've always, the board has always asked for a sort of all-inclusive cost. So I've included 10% for overhead for the contractor. I've concluded 10% for design cost, and I put 8.5% for contingencies, because anytime we touch a roof or a parking lot, we don't know what we're going to get into. That's why you can look at it a couple different ways, but we've been successful the past few years and that we're always under budget. Well, that's because we account for the unknowns, or at least we attempt to account for the unknowns. So when I give you a price, I'm suggesting that hopefully that's the maximum cost that we might incur.
Well, I understand that. It's not clear to me that you're designing. You're not like designing
a new roof.
A new roof, right? Then you're just creating a spec document of, you know, I want the 30-year shingles, or I want this.
And we don't have shingle roofs. All of our roofs are hot. They're flat roofs. They're hot tar. They're laid with a felt, and then a sort of a membrane on top of that. Then comes the hot tar and the stones and so forth. And what we've also been talking about is trying to go to a greener type of roof. They have a white material out there now, so it's more reflective of the sun. You don't need the heating, nor do you need the cooling in the winter or summer months. So there's different types of products that we're looking at that are sort of green technology, newer technology. Again, my baseline figure, if you were to take a look at roofs, where it says total sort of halfway through that spreadsheet, in 2012 I'm estimating the cost, raw cost, of $1,499,000. I'm saying with the contractor fee and contingency and design fees, that total could go up to $1,909,000. I want the board to know that the least it's going to probably cost us is $1.5 million. We'll have those other fees associated with construction or redevelopment of that particular project in that particular area.
This particular area is one of the reasons we suggested a conversation to be had by the board as it relates to fund balance use and the possibility of setting aside a specific account that comes from fund balances to fund these larger capital projects over time, because they are so critical to the overall environment of your schools, yet they are high ticket items, and they're not the same as our annual capital projects. They really are larger ticket items that we need to be prepared to put the money toward.
So it looks kind of like, I guess, say 2022, then I see the annual maintenance double. Is that in anticipation of, by spending more each year, we then don't have to do these large?
No.
Or we delay them?
I just, if you notice, I went from $5,000 to $10,000. I went from $5,000 to $10,000. I don't know what that's going to cost in the year 2022. I just put a number out there. I could have left it for simplicity, could have left it at $5,000. I said, you know, you're talking 10 years from now. What's my annual maintenance cost going to be on that particular lot by the time you get done?
You're back to parking lots.
Or roofs. It's applicable to parking lots or roofs. You need to spend X number of dollars per year. And And I don't know what those costs are, but I thought it appropriate that at least we show that there, we do dedicate X number of dollars towards normal and ongoing maintenance.
Bob, I'm looking at the Hadley roof, 2012 through 2015, and rough numbers, it's 3.5 million, mm-hmm. 3.2 million bucks. What's the square footage? What does it cost per square for a roof?
I couldn't tell you offhand what roof replacement is, but this would be bare down to the bare roof and complete replacement.
Right. I mean, the numbers I've my experience with some of roofs or some of my clients, it's anywhere from $4 to $6 a square foot.
And that could very well be.
How many square feet is?
The footprint of Hadley is approximately 180,000 square feet.
But I do like the idea of a reserve account. So if you're pushing things out another year, you're accruing for those. And again, I'm talking in a for-profit world, calling it an accrual account, but something that you set aside.
A reserve account is typically what it might be called in a large company.
Right. I think that's a really good idea.
And every year we go in and we look at these things. You know, we're going to be doing this analysis over the next couple of months now, in terms of what we need to bring forward or what we would like to bring forward for the recommendation. What I don't want to do is push the work so far out there that I've got to come to the board 2016 or 17 and say we need to spend $6 million on our roofs. I would rather prioritize those dollars and use them gradually over a number of years so we don't have such a significant investment in any one particular year.
While still getting the maximum
Absolutely.
Length of time from the roofs that we have. And that's part of the problem. I mean, that's part of the juggling act. Because as we look at this, you don't want to replace a roof too early simply because you could make your payments a little less, which is why if you look at 2015, it's a big year, partly because of the Hadley project. But you can do some of that, but you really can't do much of that. And again, the purpose of this kind of document is so that we can have a full picture of the system's needs each year and determine what our priorities are and how we expend those dollars and be able to communicate that to the board. The calculations, as Bob has said, are estimates, you know, based on a general knowledge of what a roof would cost to replace. But as we decide that that's a priority, then we start getting down into the nitty-gritty and really doing the to fine-tune it.
That's exactly what I'd like to put.
Bob, in terms of putting a reserve account in place, have you put some concepts together? A reserve account should be X amount on an annual basis based on.
We have not assigned a specific line item to this budget the tentative budget that you've seen. We certainly can add a line item for that. Phyllis, I think the year before I came here, put a line item in so that these expenditures for the Franklin parking lot and stormwater project wouldn't have such a significant impact on the year that it was actually installed. So they financed, or at least identified that project over a two-year period. And that would probably be something that we would want to consider as we move forward.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. And especially, I'm just adding up all the roof numbers. So.
There's a lot. Again, please keep in mind, these are just estimates. But the fact is that we have aging facilities that have not had, that we maintain well, but have not had any significant work since 97 or 13 years ago. 12 years ago.
And you've had your surveys done on an annual basis?
We do roofing assessments and we do parking lot assessments every year. And this is what the analysis tells us, as we know it now. So, The last, well, not the last, but the second to the last item on here is the age and obsolescence plan. What we try to do is identify the large ticket items out there for expenditures. And you notice a lot of these, some of them are $30,000 for vehicles. You have them as small as $500 or band and orchestra equipment. We've identified them for Central Services Office, as well as each of the buildings, Hadley Junior High. You know, we have our own cafeteria over there, so that's something that needs to be taken into consideration because that is very pricey equipment. We talked about home economics department. We've talked about for Hadley the band and orchestra. The fitness lab at Hadley, that's also on here. I'll tell you that I budget annually about $10,000 for the fitness lab. Something else that we need to consider is updating the security systems, and we are annually spending the $30,000 to $35,000 there. We spend about $20,000 a year just keeping the band and orchestra up to date, because for a number of years that was a neglected area of the district and of the budget. So now we've put dollars in specific areas that needed to be identified and in a plan put in place for purchasing. Now, again, not me who's going to go out and purchase these, but rather Georgia or Jim DePaulo or one of those folks at Hadley will call me and say, Bob, this is the equipment that we need to move forward this year. But this is everything that's been identified. One other item that I wanted to point out here was the tech plan. As you know, Mike has put together a tech plan that will go out for a number of years. I just dedicated X number of dollars per year for technology updates. There's no way that the year 2011 or 12 we can project what it's going to look like in 2020. But I do want you to know that there's a plan in place that we would make a commitment of $450,000 annually just to keep our technology equipment updated. And you know that you've seen a number of recommendations come through on the Finance Committee as well as the Board since January regarding updating to our technology infrastructure.
We need to see iPad 15.
Pardon me?
iPad 15.
So those are just, I didn't try to get specific here because I don't think we can get specific at this point in time. Mike has a plan in place. I've budgeted X number of dollars for him to be able to utilize over a number of years. And so at least there's a plan in place that we know what we're going to be looking to spend each year.
And Mike's plan is pretty specific.
That's, Mike manages that.
Right. But yeah, I mean, overall, you know, not to go back and rush and stuff, but I think, yeah, the specifics, when you get that would be good. To just look at the roughs as a whole. I mean, although it's good, you know, to say we're going to save up, although, you know, people in school might say, I'm saving up for this roof that my kids will never use. The other way is to sell a bond and pay for it over 20 years for the people that are actually going to use it. You know, so you might look at it that way. I mean, especially for the roofs, they say, well, is it better to do a bunch of roofs in 1 year or one contractor and sell a bond for $3 or $4 million? And spread that out over the next 20 years versus saying we're going to put away X amount ahead of time.
Sure.
Where you could be buying smart boards or other things.
Well, and I think that's why we felt that there was a larger discussion to be had around that, and that's why, you know, we didn't proceed with setting up a fund for that because we felt it was kind of mixed in with the fund balance and the spending philosophy that the board might have.
Well, that's what like District 89 does. You know, every 20 years they have a $20 million referendum and go and do all their roofs and, you know, update all the buildings and pay for it over 20 years.
Right, and, you know, that would be something that we would talk about sort of later,
right,
at a later date. I just wanted to identify, sort of give you an idea of what the dollar commitment's going to be. And the other part is, what happens if you don't have a successful referendum and we've allowed our facilities to become, I wasn't here in 97, but they told me there was a lot of issues in our buildings.
Yeah, I don't even want to get to that point like that. But something like a roof, you don't need a referendum for that type of bond, I don't think.
No.
Like a performance bond or something. I mean, aren't there certain,
there,
you know, for like heating and cooling and stuff like that.
There's performance bonds that you can work with. There's a number of different alternatives.
But you need a referendum, you believe?
Not for a performance bond, but to do your deep, well, you can do debt service extension based bonds too, which you don't need a referendum for. but which is another way to do it. But you can do. They used to have something called these certificates, which you would take operating costs and pay for, instead of actually going. When you go to referendum, then it's actually a separate levy, so that's, you know, that's being come that way. Versus taking operating funds on an annual basis and paying for it. You know, that's what you got to watch. I mean, that's where your balancing act is. Performance bond is I'm still committing my current year's operating revenues or operating expenses to pay for that bond.
Right.
Versus actually going to a referendum or doing a debt service extension based bonding where you actually can go out and levy for it. So it's your revenue source is two different places.
So there's a number of different ways.
Here's correct. We've got financing options to look at.
So, and then the last item on here is the painting schedule, and I've just tried to include some dollars every year for the next number of years just to make sure that our buildings are updated. We've also talked about this with regard to the 21st century learning environments, 21st century classroom. And we've been putting together a painting schedule that will give each building its own sort of unique look to it. And we're going to be doing Lincoln this year. We're also going to be doing the 21st century model classrooms at two classrooms at each of the elementary schools this summer. So that's something that we'll be looking to roll out over the next couple of years also. So we have about a half hour left. I know we wanted to talk a bit about fund balances. I put together a presentation here, and then I also did want to mention, just so that I don't lose track of it, we went out to bid for transportation. I didn't change, though. I just did want to mention that I received an email late last week from District 87 asking the member districts that we went out to bid with, 89, 41, and 16, to gauge our interest in participating with them purchasing camera systems. It'd be purchased over a three-year period. It'd be put on approximately 70 buses, of which we'll use about 30, I believe, every day. And our commitment would be $9,000 a year. And then we would ultimately own those after 3 years. I just wanted to mention that because we're sort of leaning towards agreeing with the group in terms of acquiring those.
87 had some of their work. Was that when you changed companies they were working on or something?
Well, they have some, perhaps, but they want to equip all of the buses with cameras. And our Subtran buses, we've done that. We made an agreement with Subtran this year through CASE to do the same on our Subtran buses, add video capacity. And I certainly, I think from a safety standpoint, Bob uses the language of no-brainer, but it makes perfect sense to have video on our buses and the ability to use that if something should occur on a bus. We see increasing incidents of behavior issues on buses, and this is a way to help monitor that.
Bob, before you totally switch gears,
yes.
Sorry to go back on this, but the portables, when you say refresh, what was that? Obviously, it'll be replaced.
Well, yeah.
Or it does.
We have a portable that's at the base of Lincoln in the back behind the playground areas.
My daughter's class was in that portable. So I know about that one.
Okay.
That's a good example.
I have been called to that building on several occasions over the past year for a number of issues. Some roof leakage, some indoor air quality issues, which is normally an indication of mold, HVAC issues. We checked the manufacture date on that unit. It's only 14 years old. To be honest with you, it was built as a construction trailer, not to be used as a classroom. I think that's kind of obvious when you go see it. The windows leak a little bit. The roof is having issues. We're having issues around the skirted area that we close in. What happens is that kind of sits down at the bottom of the hill, dug into that hill a little bit, so all the water that runs down off of that driveway or off of the neighbor's property kind of ends up being captured in this specific area. So I did meet with representatives of IMS, who does all of our portables, and had put together some ballpark figures for them. These portables are not permanent structures. They are not going to last like a 50-year building. They're going to start to need to be replaced, and I think it would. I don't think I'd be doing my job if I didn't just put a ballpark figure out there in terms of what it's going to cost as we move forward. Last summer, we spent about $25,000 at the portable at the back of Churchill. The walls that support the HVAC units on the exterior of those buildings, that unit was beginning to crumble. It actually started to collapse the roof. So we had spent $25,000 last summer on updating that particular portable. These are things the board may not have heard previously. I should probably do a little better job of communicating that. But the fact of the issue is that we're required as a district to dedicate a lot of ongoing dollars towards maintenance of these facilities. And it's just going to get worse. So I've met with the folks from IMS, and they're projecting anywhere from $150,000 to $200,000 to replace that unit next year.
I think one of the things that Bob and I have talked about recently is that, and the Hadley or the Lincoln portable has probably illustrated that for us, that we need to do a regular update to the board on portable maintenance. But in the absence of a master facility plan, if we have a portable that is of poor environmental quality, you know, we're going to have to replace it, and that's something we don't want to do. But
so even though we lease it, we're responsible for the maintenance.
That one we own. There are some that we have a mix of units that we own and a mix of those that we lease. This is one that we own.
So if we replaced it, we would not purchase another one. Obviously,
To be honest, that would not be my recommendation in the future, would be to own these. And the last round of leases that we did, we put a clause in there that would allow us to escape should we ever be successful in a referendum. So we wouldn't have to worry about negotiating with them. The fact of the matter is, though, that there is not a master facility plan. We don't know what's going to happen with that, and we need to plan accordingly at this point in time. And my ultimate recommendation would be to lease these things in case they ever do go away, because the value of selling them is little, if any. Any other questions?
They're constructed on site. So it's not like a
trailer
on wheels that
you
move around.
So they're really not portables?
Well, they are hauled on site.
They come in.
They're secure.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to roll away.
They don't blow away.
They could blow away.
So any other questions? And if you don't have any this evening, just send me an email or give me a call. We can certainly dig into this a little deeper. But again, this is a tool that I use internally. And it's served the district well over the past 2 years, and we just look to continue to maintain it. So then the final order of business this evening is I was asked to put together some numbers regarding the fund balance discussion, conversation that the board will have over the coming months. What I've done here, if you look with the sheet in front of you, first line item or first presentation there is what we call on a cash basis, and we are a cash-based organization. We recognize our cash when we receive it. We recognize expenditures when we disperse them. However, when our financial statements are prepared by the outside auditors, they put us on an accrual basis, and it's pretty close to a full accrual basis. So what I was asked to do is present this on a cash basis as well as an accrual basis. And I'll be honest with you, it's a conversation. This is a presentation that grew out of a conversation that I had with Drew. He asked for me to develop this from a couple of different scenarios. So just very briefly, if you look on the top presentation there, cash basis, projected cash balances as of 6/30/11, they're divided up accordingly amongst all of our funds, all of our operating and the other funds that are necessary. We're looking at a cash basis projection of $29 million, $29.195 million. Then we have the budget for next year of the revenue budget of $46,175,000, less the expenditures of $45,572,000 for a surplus estimated at this point in time for next year's budget of $603,000. Now, if you took the projected surplus plus the beginning cash balances of $29 million, you would end up with a projected ending cash balances of $29,799,000. And what we typically do is we back out the June receipt of taxes. That's board policy. We may receive those taxes in June, but we're not allowed to touch them until the next fiscal year. So that's why we back them out for an estimated fund balance of $9,410,000. The next line, by fund, there's a calculation there that shows the total fund balance for each individual fund as well as the total funds for the district, expressed as a percentage of the total expenditures by that fund and for the district as a whole. They vary from a low in the education fund. Well, actually, we have 0% in capital projects, working cash, and TORT. But actually from a low in the education of 2.52 to a high in the O&M of 118.6% for an overall percent of 20.65%. So that would be the $9 million divided by the expenditures of $45,572,000 to come up with that 20.65%. Again, this is on a cash basis. Now, I wanted to comment here in that there's been a lot of discussions in the district as well amongst other districts and people in my profession. And the general rule of thumb that Phyllis and I just attended the our state conference out at the Pheasant Run a couple of weeks ago. And there was a lot of conversation that took place out there about appropriate fund balances. And the general rule of thumb is about 33% of your operating expenditures would be considered the minimum fund balance necessary to protect a district from unknown financial scenarios. As we know, the state has been less than enthusiastic with paying us the amount of state revenues that we've been allocated. And we know that we've been late really for the past two fiscal years. And we expect this to continue, as well as not only are they going to continue to be late, but we expect them to quite possibly reduce revenues or, excuse me, payments to school districts.
Is the 33% based on a cash basis or a accrual basis?
You know, that's some investigating that I'm going to have to do to get a little greater clarity. But most school districts, especially those of our size, operate on a cash basis, and that's the general rule of thumb that we hear is 33% of fund balances. So I'll get some greater clarity. I'll ask some of our colleagues and see exactly how that would be determined. If you remember earlier this year, I put together a scenario, not a scenario, I put together sort of a comparison of all the school districts and the Glenbard Consortium. And we were actually taking audited financial numbers, audited statements from last fiscal year. I think there were six districts in there. We were the second lowest. So I think that's saying something also. Although people feel as though we have significantly healthy fund reserves, it shows that compared to our fellow school districts in this area, we're actually second from the bottom.
Didn't we also ask our auditor the last couple of years? We asked our auditor what that, best guesstimate. Phyllis, you remember that, right? His best practice, and he said it was up to 30%.
Well, that's the minimum threshold. Yeah. Is 30 to 33%. Yeah. That would be the minimum comfort level that they would have.
Right.
And something else. Now, we we're audited annually. And in addition to that, we receive a financial rating through the state of Illinois. That financial rating has significant implications to the school district as a whole. Now, right now, we're not out doing a lot of, bond purchases or bond sales and things of that nature. But all of these things have implications in terms of what you would pay down the road if you were looking to sell some bonds, the potential interest cost that you would be required to pay to investors. Last year we had a financial rating of 3.65 on a 4-point scale. We're looking to improve upon it, and it's all been predicated upon how you manage your revenues and expenditures, how you plan for the future, and it helps us to have a 5-year financial plan out there. They ask about our financial plan. They ask about our capital plans. Do you see any significant issues out there regarding your facilities? Because of the plans that we put in place, we have a good core quality there. Those scores run anywhere from something rather poor of 1% or 1.5% up to a maximum of 4. So we have achieved financial recognition for the past several years, and we as the finance people in the district would like to see the district continue along those guidelines, and that is to continually receive financial recognition as we move forward.
That rating is not solely determined by fund balance, but it's something you mentioned.
There are 4 parts or 5 parts to that calculation. It's revenues to expenditures, it's fund balance to revenues and expenditures. There's 5 different numbers, I believe, that are used in that calculation, and it's part of our comprehensive annual financial report that we publish annually.
What is the fund balance percentage? If we were to drop below, that would affect our rating.
Those are calculations we'd have to make, or certainly conversations that we would have with our auditors. But and I think there's 4 parts, Phyllis, do you recall? 4 parts to that calculation?
I believe so.
I think it's 4 parts. Just that fund balance.
I thought
I had heard it was 25%. If you're above it, it doesn't hurt you. Once you go below 25, then there's some other number. And I heard the lowest is like, what, 3, 4, 5% at which the state comes in.
Yeah. Put you on financial watch. And I believe we didn't get financial recognition because our fund balances until 3 years ago.
Right.
And that was the last criteria that we had not met to rise to that financial recognition.
Any idea what the lowest fund balance to get state recognition was?
We didn't have to run those numbers.
Yeah.
No, I mean at the time, when you say this...
When we reached that point,
right.
what was our balance? We'd have to look. I don't recall that number.
But I remember having that conversation with the auditor because it was significant to you, Bob, and Phyllis, because it as you said, year on year, it would impact our bond rating. And like you said, we're not going out to purchase bonds or say, right.
But it does have a long-term effect.
Certainly, it's a long-term issue based on what we are looking at. Long-term too.
One of the things that we just received last year too was an increase in our bond rating to a AAA also, which we had not. We had a 2A previously. Now we're at a AAA, AA. Now we're at a AAA, which is a significant feather in our cap too.
I know one of the things that we did talk about was putting in some other analysis of other districts in terms of what their fund balances are, and including that into the recent analysis.
That would be a conversation that I would have to that I could get into. But don't forget, those numbers were based off of the annual financial reports. The fiscal year isn't due to end until June 30th, which means I probably won't get that information available until October or so.
Well, and I just would like to note that the level of analysis that Bob's done here is significant, and if we were to do that for the whole consortia, that's a tremendous amount of work to ask Bob to do. What he did for the board earlier, which was to, here's what the fund balances are for the Glenbard Associate Districts and what percentage of their total budget those are. I think gives us a benchmark. I think to do the deeper analysis of what is it in their ed fund, what it is in their transportation fund.
No. I don't want that. I'm thinking total. I don't need you to do that.
I don't need a breakout.
Yeah.
There's a 5-year report, a 2-pager you can get for every district in the state. Mm-hmm. Also, and you can go pick out whatever districts you want. But the method of accounting affects that number.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you need to, and I don't know if, to me, if you look at the projected low fund balance for the you know, projected for the next year, that really tells you the low point before you get the next taxes. To me, right. That doesn't matter what your method of accounting is.
Well,
you're going to, at what point do you have to sell bonds, you know,
or TAWS or,
TAWS or whatever versus that. But it's a projection because the actual expenses and revenues, the timing of them will vary. But you can say for the coming year, here's the expenses and the revenues that we have. And given, you know, the way we spend, we're going to hit a low point before our June taxes come in of some amount.
That's about now.
Is that number growing? Is it falling? But if you look at that at every district, it can tell you, because you could be on a cash basis and so a 30% fund balance and still be selling TAWS.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense if you go compare it. You have to have the same method of accounting.
Right, and that's, well, when I did that comparative analysis, those were accrual basis numbers because it came right from the financial reports. This is a document that I created internally, so I looked at it from a cash basis as well as an accrual basis. Now, keep in mind, you know, if you go down, I just want to finish up. We only have a few minutes left. But if you look below, I've done it also on accrual basis for the present year as well as next fiscal year. And those fund balances prop up to around just in excess of 31%. However, don't forget that those scenarios or those numbers also include significant revenues that the auditors have accrued into our financial statements, some of which we're still waiting for from last year. And the fact of the matter remains that we've been told that we'll probably receive three of the payments for this fiscal year. We're going to receive next year, and as late, like a lot of our payments came in October, November, now we're not expecting them until December or shortly thereafter. So instead of being maybe, instead of allocating numbers or apportioning those numbers at a reduced rate of what we were accustomed to or what we were promised, not only is there going to be a further reduction in those revenues, but also they're going to be spread out in a longer time. You're going to be waiting for those dollars to a greater extent. There was an article in a paper last week that we came across regarding Elgin and the fact that the state is now talking about eliminating a certain payment for transportation charges. That's not a lot of money to us, but a school district like Elgin, it's significant. So those are just the different types of issues that we're dealing with out there right now, and it's always a set of unknowns. We just really don't know what's going to happen with this thing.
Well, and they are currently talking about state funding at our foundational level, whether or not that will change, even though the budget includes a zero, you know, staying the same for next year,
right,
with planning for a 5% reduction should the, you know, dollars not come. But
and we've done some calculations with general state aid where that might happen, and we aren't much above a threshold that where we might be eliminated from receiving state aid, general state aid. We don't know that for a fact, but we're right on a cusp of between our EAV and our enrollment and our the lower demographics that are included in that calculation. All would be considered at some time in the future.
All right, I guess just to, you know, if we want to have this conversation, we need to have it at the board level too, I think.
Well, is this a workshop kind of conversation?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think, is that something that's going as part of the retreat?
Well, I don't know if we're having a retreat until I hear from all members of the board, whether we have everyone's available, but that's the kind of conversation we would have there. And that agenda has not been created, but yes, that's probably...
I think that's an important conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would be helpful to understand, so what, you know, what I call the common denominator is, you know, what are those state levels, you know, as the bare minimum requirements, and are those on a cash or accrual basis?
Could you say that again? I'm not sure I understood what you said. Common
levels, the fund balance levels that then affect whether or not they, you know, affect your rating.
Oh, I see.
Whether or not they then step in and you start to put the watchdog list or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to significant. We would have to be in. We would have to be in a deficit situation for a number of years.
On multiple
financial board.
Like, just what is that first threshold at which then it begins fitting into that calculation?
Yeah,
Where you lose recognition.
That's what I was just going to say. What is the minimum threshold that we would need to maintain fund balances at to still achieve financial recognition? I think that's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm assuming, Dan, you're saying is important.
Right. And I understand, Drew, you're wanting to see other districts, but to be honest, in my opinion, I think some districts are carrying too much cash. I'm not mm-hmm. sure what that would do other mm-hmm. than just say, here's where we are.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be nice to have kind of a benchmark, you know, where we are and what's going on in terms of other districts. Again, I don't need you to do this.
No, I understand.
Just the two pager that Steve's talking about.
Just be aware. Okay, well, I'll have to dig for that.
Those are
on the
website.
But I have the latest information in that scenario or that presentation that you were given in January. Now we're waiting for this year's numbers.
Okay. I mean, we could use the one we did before. I don't think things changed dramatically.
No, certainly not since the last reports were completed. So that's all I have for this evening.
Good job,
if you have any questions or concerns, please give me a call or send me an email.